Okay, that was your 7 minutes, everyone.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, everybody. I did suggest to you, and I did shoot it across your bows as a warning at the beginning of today, that not all of you would find this process comfortable. I also suggested that many of the life habits you've developed, and they are habits, you weren't born with them as a baby, you develop these patterns over a period of time, for whatever reason that caused them. And I'm in the process of trying to say to you, your life habits are not helpful. That is not a comfortable message to give as a teacher or as a workshop facilitator. And it sure as heck is not a comfortable message for you to sit there listening to. That the habits you've developed over life are not helpful to your listener to create genius. One of the most ineffective habits, and this is not going to be pleasant for some of you, that is stopping this happening is when, and I've been teaching now for 35 years and observing body habits in classrooms for all of that time. Here's the body behaviour I'm observing, which is really uncomfortable. Your partner, who's desperately trying to express their hearts and minds to you, are desperately, and I do mean desperately, seeking the attention of your eyes to confirm that you're properly listening to them. And some of you are not giving them that attention of your eyes. You're looking at the table, you're looking at the wall, and it's just rude. It is destructive to their... They're actually doing this. They're doing this. They're leaning forward and looking up into your eyes because you're just not giving them attention. You're looking at the table, you're looking at the wall. You're off on one, thinking about what they're saying. No, they're supposed to be doing the thinking, you're supposed to be doing the deep listening in order that their thinking can take place. And what's happening is they're so desperate in their energy to get your attention that they're only working about this level. And you're actually blocking them because of your life habit. And I do the same thing. Who here takes notes in meetings as their clients are talking? In this exercise, please stop it. It's just destructive to the thinker. I know you're financial planners, I know all the legal implications of that, I know the compliance implications, but in this room, please stop taking notes whilst they're thinking. Unless you have a personal experience that's about to blow up and cause you great embarrassment in front of the crowd, and you need to be excused desperately, you keep your eyes riveted on the eyes and face and countenance. You don't have to challenge them with staring at them, but on the countenance of your talker. To do otherwise is to basically signal, A, I'm off on one. I'm kind of listening to you, but I'm kind of thinking about what you're saying and digesting it and thinking other things about it. And actually, I'm not really listening to you at all. I'm just giving you enough attention to keep you talking. That is not conducive to this kind of thinking. This is not about your comfort, this is about their comfort. And you must just remove your comfort for the moment. Your turn will come. They will then have to listen to you, and you can be as comfortable as you like, and you can look all over the place, because now you're the speaker and the thinker. But the listener has to keep their eyes riveted on your countenance, away from your notepad, away from the table, as some of you are doing. And that's hard after 20 to 30 years of doing the same thing. It's hard. But I can see what's happening. Your thinker, your speaker, is desperate for your attention. They're doing this. And if they're spending all their energy doing that, then they're not thinking clearly. Happened in Newbury as well, Gordon.
David, when I was the client, I probably find it uncomfortable speaking about some of these issues, so I very rarely looked at Stephen at all. I was looking at the page and thinking away. But any time I did look up, Stephen was absolutely riveted in what you should be doing. But I just wondered if the fact that maybe I wasn't looking at him constantly we'd allow them to drift a lot better.
As the thinker and speaker, the one that we're trying to draw the genius out of, your right is to look away wherever you want, because that's how you think. You go off on one, well then we need to let you go off on one. But as the listener, your job is to listen and do nothing else but listen. With your full human faculties. And if you think that listening is about your ears, you want to try being half deaf like me. Don't listen with your ears, you listen with all of your being. All of your being. Your eyes riveted with fascination, and I do mean fascination. The opposite of that is disrespect and lack of fascination. You need to be fascinated by what your partner's saying, even if you think it's a complete twaddle, even if you think the guy's a complete idiot and what a lot of rubbish is going on in their life. That's not the point. The point is, do you have the professional capability to listen at this level? Because the difference that will happen in that room will be something you've never experienced before. Just try, just trust me on this. It will change.
So the barrier, David, to that is actually this sort of obsession with note-taking.
Yes.
Because we all like to sit there with our various...
Yeah.
But it's just forget about that at this stage.
Just for the moment, forget about it. I had an MD who ran a very sizable company indeed. He really upset me when I went to the first meeting with him with a very important prospective client, a group scheme. Very big group scheme was what we're trying to win. And this MD sat with me and never took a single note. That really upset me. Never took a single note. He was just fascinated by the group financial director he was with. Never took his eyes off his mouth. Fascinated. That group financial director is now my mentor. Never forgot that meeting. Somebody was fascinated by him. Seven years later.
If you take that further, you actually don't need a case or a laptop in that first meeting. Oh. Actually, because we all arrive with our stage props.
Just baggage. Just learn to listen with all of your being to this human being and seek the genius from them. This is not a game we're playing, this is a person's life you're working with.
David, do you want to ask a question?
Yeah.
I know that a lot of this stuff is about us, but we are making the assumption that clients come to us ready for that. And given your experience sometimes with the MD, I don't know, business is more about lots and lots of people. How do you find that you... Do you set that up? Does the marketing set the person up ready for this when they walk through the door? Because if it's difficult for us, it's going to be difficult for clients. And I do a bit of work with resolution members, which matrimonial stuff is really raw. And you can quite easily trip yourself up with these sort of trying to get there in a really emotional state. And if clients aren't ready for that, then maybe it takes 3 or 4 meetings for them to get to that stage. What you're actually working out is whether they're the right type of client for you.
Yes, there are about 4 questions in your question. I'll pick up on one of them if I may. They're never ready for this. They're never ready for this. And immediately after this, you're going to go into role play. We're going to learn to just ask the first question and then just sit back and listen. With you in a second on that. And this afternoon we're going to take that further on. But for example, the question you've just used, what's the question at the top of that page?
What would you like to discuss at this point?
Yeah, that's the only readiness they need. So what would you like to discuss at this point? The only preparation another human being needs is permission to speak. Permission to think and permission in your presence to feel the emotions in a divorce situation that they're really feeling, instead of all the twaddle we want to throw on them with our logical financial plans, which is not what they come to us for. They're never ready. Your job as a professional is to lay the platform so that it eases into this process. And Nigel will show you that in a second. Okay, Nigel, do you want to summarise for me the pause? What's the pause all about? Page 19. So please, in the next role play, do not take your eyes off the person. It is not about your comfort as a listener, it's about their comfort as a speaker. Do not take your eyes off the person. Do you want to explain to me what the pause is all about, Nigel?
The pause is from the interviewer's perspective. You allow them space to let them tell you what it is that's been bothering them. And as Gordon demonstrated, if it takes an hour, you've got to give them that time, that space for them to have that emotional thought. And it is immensely powerful.
Yeah.
Immensely.
You want to expand on immensely powerful? And give us some examples of that?
Because they'll just continue on their journey with the story. You think you've got something really profound and emotional. That pause will allow them to keep digging deeper into the well. You'll get to such a depth that you couldn't believe you could get to.
Yeah.
But also, they don't need to explain something about the pause. It might just be they just need that 10 seconds
to think.
They might have said to them that, in a very brief summary, their problem might be that the parents live in a cold house. And it'd be easy for you to analytically find a solution, but if you allow them to talk about, well, we've got. Everyone's actually got rheumatoid arthritis. That could be something that's really powerful to them, and that just needs in itself a moment, because that's immensely powerful to that human being. And as David's doing with me now, I can keep going.
How many times did Nigel stop speaking?
Four or five.
Who wanted to jump in? And I stopped you. In Newbury, somebody did that and somebody else jumped in and I had to stop them quite forcibly. And I could see that the person who was trying to speak had stopped talking. Was looking at me directly, had not looked away, but I looked at their eyes and I knew that they were off on one. And somebody jumped in with the most genius commentary and I shut him up. He was quite upset. And I asked the person, is there anything more? He said, yes, actually there was. Quite angrily for being interrupted. And he said to the bloke who interrupted him, I wasn't going down that way, down that path. What I wanted to say, brackets, if you just let me finish it, close brackets, was the following. And the room was silent. Recognising that they'd all wanted to jump in because he'd stopped speaking. But behind his eyes I saw that he was off on one. He was on a journey. And I had to let him finish. Because they all thought they knew what he was going to say next and they were all wrong. Including me. We just destroy quality thinking of our clients. Just destroy the pause. Right, I want you to give me three more prompt questions. Instead of any, is there anything more, I want you to give me three alternatives to is there anything more. Three more prompt questions that will keep them talking.
Tell me about
that. Yeah, tell me about that.
What else?
What
can
else?
Can you expand on that?
Sorry?
Can you expand?
Yeah. Now, I'm going to write that down, Mick. Because we need to be really careful here. I want something else that's a prompt question that does what that job does.
Why is that important? Why is that important?
Why is that important? I want to write that down, Eric. But the only one I've boxed so far is, what else?
How does it make you feel?
I'm going to explain why in a second.
How does it make you feel?
How does that make you feel?
And?
And? Now, look at that board really carefully, because the ability of you to draw the best answers out of this is up on that board. The problem with these questions is that they're all useful clarifying questions. I want you to help me clarify that. And that's not what we're asking you to do. If you look at page 19 in the fourth box, it says, do not ask clarifying questions at this stage. Do not ask them. Do not order them or instruct them to clarify their comment. What you want is you want more out of them. More, just let them run. Let them just pour it out. The instruction at the beginning of the whole exercise was in order that they can pour forth. Not in order that so it may be more clear for your brain because you don't understand it. That's your problem. It's not theirs. These are all clarifying questions. They come later. What your job is to allow them to pour forth, not to help you clear up what you don't understand. That's your problem. You need to listen more.
The problem with using why in this instance is that it can be perceived from the client's point of view as judgmental.
Yes. Yeah. This is why in teaching and in counselling and in listening is a very judgmental question. We try and avoid that. It's almost a threat. I'm making a judgment on you to explain to me why you want to do that. Now, there are times when I'm coaching and I will blooming ask you to explain to me why you've done that, but only when I've listened for 2 hours first in the discovery meeting.
Isn't Bill Backer, doesn't he write a book with that question, what's important?
Yeah, he starts with clarifying questions straight away. I'm going underneath that. I'm going underneath Kinder. I'm going underneath Sullivan. Going underneath Maria Nebeth and going to some underlying processes that say, first, listen. Just shut up and listen. And stop clarifying and questioning and pointing them directions and pushing them where you want them to go. Just listen. Another question would be simply, is there anything else? Is there anything else? I once sat with somebody from a bank, a very intelligent woman, frightened me, she was so intelligent. She really was scarily intelligent. And she came to me, and I wasn't quite sure why she was there, but she needed some help of some sort. And we sat for an hour in a boardroom. I never got past the question, is there anything else? She talked with lots of silences and pauses, sometimes lasting 30 seconds to a minute, which is really uncomfortable. Stared at the wall, and for an hour, all I asked was, is there anything else? She then wrote to me and she said, in all of my years in corporate banking, I've never attended a meeting that affected me in the way that hour did. I didn't do anything. I just asked, is there anything else? I found out stuff that she probably has never told anybody else in her life. Is there anything else? Okay. Now we're going to go to page 18, back again. And we're going to try What you've done now is you've learnt to overcome a lifetime worth of habits simply in order that they know you're listening to them and that something begins to come out that's never come out before. Now you're going to help them create a vision of the future. So what you've done so far is explore. Now, actually, someone just finished the sentence on page 17. Go on, Ian. Finish the song title on page 17. Everybody's desperate to jump on you.
I can see forever.
Thank you, Ian. Say that without moving your lips. Thanks, Richard.
What's the answer?
On a clear day, you can see forever.
On a clear day, you can see how long? Yeah, well, she was one of the singers. On a clear day, you can see forever. Sentence finished by Richard. We're being wicked to Richard today. He can stand it. He's been with me for 2 years. On a clear day, you can see forever. You need to help them to see their life in a way they've never seen it before. Your job is to help them create vision. Okay, the first question. I want you to read the question on page 18, Kinder question 1, out loud, please. Stuart, nice and loud, the Kinder question 1.
I want you to imagine that you are financially secure. You have enough money to take care of your needs now and in the future. The question is, how would you live your life? What would you do with the money? Would you change anything? Let yourself go. Don't hold back on your dreams. Describe a life that is complete, that is richly yours.
Okay, we're not going to read the rest of the page and the commentaries there. We'll come back to that. 7 minutes each with Kinder question number 1. 7 minutes each using Kinder question number 1. Go. You're helping them create a vision for the future.
That to me would be.